is modern drug development different to traditional methods?
Well, it's a very interesting question to somebody like me. It's interesting, at least to me, to think about the history of how we've developed drugs as a society. And if you go back in kind of relatively ancient times, of course, people would have looked to herbs and so on to try and help them out, making infusions of leaves, blah, blah, blah. Sort of modern drug discovery was probably inspired by aspirin. We were talking about paracetamol, which is a similar drug, of course. And people realised that something in willow trees was able to cure fevers and headaches and so on. And eventually someone figured out it was aspirin, and eventually we were able to make aspirin in the laboratory rather than getting it out of willow trees. And that was kind of the birth of the pharmaceutical industry, if you like, that we could actually make a drug and sell it rather than using some leaves. What's happened since then is an amazing story, really, in that certainly in the UK, a whole industry, world-class industry, grew up from that of people making organic chemicals and selling them as medicinal drugs to great advantage of a lot of people and making a lot of money out of it at the same time. However, people did over time was focus less on the natural sources like the willow tree and more on proteins in our bodies and thinking about how drugs might interact with those proteins and have the effects we want.
So drug development has moved to looking more at the body and looking at proteins and the chemical compositions rather than looking at things like leaves. Well, are new drugs still being developed, you know, in this modern 21st century where we've got laboratories across the world using these traditional methods where we just go out and find some leaves? Is that still relevant and useful?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. And what's happened recently is, in fact, that I think the companies have somewhat slowed down in being able to use this approach of looking at proteins in our bodies. And the number of new drugs coming out of their programs is slowing down, and they're starting to lose money, really, because of that. There are good reasons for that. But one thing that's certainly happened recently is that people are going back to look at inspiration from nature again, and I was very excited to see that this year's Nobel Prize the prize for medicine, I think, rather than for chemistry, was shared between, I think, two people. The one that really caught my eye was a Chinese researcher who helped discover a new cure for malaria a form of malaria that was resistant to all the quinine type drugs that people take. And she was inspired by a plant that people in China took for malaria called Artemisia annua, I think, and a compound she discovered in it called artemisinin. And that has given birth to a whole new range of anti-malarial programs that seem to be having effect and saving lives. So the Nobel Prize this year was for people who've gone back to looking at natural sources for drugs, which is very exciting for us chemists.
So would you argue you've kind of got to a stage where we know pretty much, well, we're kind of getting to know too much about the body and about the proteins and the chemical side of things, and there's kind of nothing new to really learn? We need to go back out into looking at leaves and natural sources. Is that the point where we're...
I think what's clear is we actually know too little about how drugs work in the body. And what we can do by going back to nature is find different kinds of chemicals, exciting different shapes and so on, different compositions that can give us a new view on how drugs can interact with our bodies. The simple model that was so successful in the 20th century of a kind of lock and key, where the drug was like a key in a lock that was a protein, is clearly grossly oversimplified, and I think we have run out of opportunities to exploit that model. And what people are realizing is that it's fairly obvious, really, that when you take a drug or any chemical into your body, it's likely to interact with lots of places in your body, lots of proteins and other molecules in your body, and it's a complicated network of interactions.
I want to move it on and ask you, what does polypharmacology mean? What does it involve, research-wise?
Okay, well, polypharmacology is really what I was just describing, is that a drug might interact with a lot of points in the body. We're thinking mainly of proteins. And indeed, there's long been drugs, particular antipsychotic drugs, that are believed to work in such a way. What people are able to do now is build computational models of networks of proteins in the body and think about how a drug might interact with a whole network rather than a single point of action.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you what your research into drugs involves.
We absolutely wanted to exploit this sort of context I just described by taking known drugs, and actually I mentioned antipsychotic drugs, and we chose one of those, that's believed to interact with a lot of proteins. We thought that if we explored as many of these protein interactions as possible by looking at all the proteins that our drug interacted with, we might find one that gave us a clue to a new use for this old drug. And that's exactly what we did. We screened our antipsychotic drug against a whole library, we called it, of proteins. Looking at ones that it seemed to have an effect on, we found one that was linked to both Alzheimer's disease and to certain forms of cancer. We followed up on the latter and have been able to show that this drug, risperidone, which very many people take around the world for schizophrenia, for example, seems to have, at least in the models we've used, a very positive effect on certain cancers. And we're hoping soon to take risperidone into a clinical trial in people who are very poorly with lung cancer.
So would it be fair to say what you could be doing is looking for side effects for drugs? Is that, in short, what it really could be?
Yeah, well, I said earlier on that all drugs have kind of positive and negative effects, and we think of the positive effect and then the side effects. Usually we think that side effects are things we don't want to happen, but people realised years ago that actually some of those side effects which were unwanted in one context might be positives in another context. So they might be unwanted if you've got a mental illness and you're taking our drug, but if you've got cancer, then it might all look different. And so side effects are maybe just different effects, and in another context could be positive effects.
Okay, so I wanted to bring it back to painkillers a bit. I know this isn't your strong point. Can you tell us a bit about painkillers and about the effect different painkillers have on the body? Do they all do the same thing? Because there are three, well, I know of, that you can typically go into your chemist and buy, you know, your paracetamol, your aspirin and your ibuprofen. Are they all the same? Is there any difference?
They have similarities. And as I said, what they do is act to block the signal that goes from the pain you're feeling, so wherever it is in your body, to your brain. What happens is the thing that's causing the pain causes some chemical signals to be produced in your body, which are then eventually transmitted through to the brain. And by blocking those, by interacting with one of the proteins, one of the enzymes in that chemical signaling cascade, the drug can block the signal. And the ones you mentioned there, aspirin, paracetamol and ibuprofen, do tend to act in the same way. But going back to what we've been saying earlier, aspirin's a good example of a very effective drug, but does have side effects. And very many people, when they take aspirin, get stomach upsets and the like.
Because I remember I once read that it's recommended, apparently, that you should be taking aspirin every day, and it's some way supposedly good for you.
But people do say that. I think it's a controversial subject, and I'm certainly not qualified to advise on that, Adil. But I think that would depend on your particular situation. I suppose my feeling is that any advice like that you read in the newspapers, take care. Another big area of medicine in recent years has been something called personalised medicine, which acknowledges the fact that actually, of course, we're all different. Our lifestyles and our particular genetic makeup and so on mean that all of us have different reactions to particular drugs. We know that. And so sort of big generic statements like everyone should take aspirin every day seem to be at odds with this trend towards more personalised medicine, where you'd hope that your doctor is thinking about you and your life.
So the best advice would really be to ask your doctor before you think of, you know, taking aspirin every day.
I would have thought so.
Don't just trust the newspapers. I wanted to ask you, with regards to painkillers, is there really any motivation to develop new painkillers, seeing as we've got three that seem to work quite well? You know, should we be trying to make more, or is three enough?
Well, as I said, what we're really doing with the painkillers we've been talking about, that is blocking the signals. Of course, a lot of pain comes from inflammation and so on, and inflammation can be damaging in its own right. So you might actually want to help reduce the inflammation. I think ibuprofen does tend to do that. And in other words, there may be circumstances where, rather than just blocking the pain signal, you actually want to reduce the cause of the pain in the first place. And we're very far from being able to do that effectively and in a trouble-free way. So I think there's a lot of research around reducing inflammation that could lead to new drugs.
Is there any point in further drug development for illnesses that we've already really got solutions to?
Well, again, that's going to be very dependent on the context, but almost certainly yes. I mean, your question may be pointing me to talk about resistance to drugs. I already mentioned malaria earlier on. That's a good example of where people will have heard of quinine, chloroquine, and the drugs, again, inspired quinine, of course, from a natural bush, that people realised they could develop drugs based on quinine, and those were very successful. But unfortunately, over the years, the parasites that cause malaria have been able to develop resistance. So they change their genetic makeup and they change themselves slightly, or at least they change their progeny, and so that the drugs don't work anymore. And of course, this is very much the case with antibiotics in general against bacteria and so on. The organisms can change so that the drugs don't work anymore. So we always need to be on our guard and ready to develop new drugs to combat resistance. And that's why I was so excited about this Nobel Prize going to the person who discovered artemisinin, which has led to anti-malarial drugs that act in an entirely different way and are really saving huge numbers of lives around the world.
Can multinational drug companies be blamed for failing to develop vaccinations for things like Ebola, which we have known has existed for many, many years? Can they be blamed for not developing a vaccine earlier, because we pretty much developed it a few months after the outbreak began? Is it their fault?
Oh, and that's a really interesting question, and I emphasised earlier on how the pharmaceutical industry, not least in the UK, helped to drive these huge advances in healthcare that we all rather take for granted now through the course of the 20th century. Of course, they're commercial organisations, and their duty to their shareholders is to make profit. And in fact, you're likely, you could very cynically say that pharmaceutical companies have got very little interest in actually curing anything. They would rather sell you perhaps things like painkillers that deal with chronic issues but don't actually solve them.
So you could argue in a drug company's best interest, it's kind of to semi-cure you, so they can develop a new drug which will completely cure you and make more money.
Yeah, I mean, we're being a little bit cynical here, and there are many very devoted and well-meaning scientists working in these companies trying to really help people out, and we must acknowledge that. But it's clear that a disease like Ebola, and in fact malaria is another good example that tends to affect people in the poorer areas of the world, get less attention because the people who are affected can't afford the vaccine or the drug in any way. And this is where it's so important for international agencies like the World Health Organization. And to his great credit, Bill Gates, through his Gates Foundation, is addressing exactly some of these problems. And I guess recycling some of the profit of capitalism into helping people who aren't able to pay for their own healthcare so readily. Can we blame the pharmaceutical companies? I guess not in a simple sense, because we've left them and sort of capitalism to drive these developments, and very successful in many senses they've been too. We could, however, hope that they behaved a little differently on occasions.
So whose responsibility is it to research drug development for issues in the developing world, where there's less research of their own in drug development, and they've got weaker facilities, we've got very strong facilities in this country? Is it our responsibility, or is it our responsibility to develop drugs for our own citizens?
Well, we're getting into quite tricky stuff here, ethics and whatever. I guess for me, there's probably two levels to answering that. One is we're all human beings, and surely we have an ethical duty to help other human beings, regardless of their situation, into their geographical situation. So I hope all of us would hope we can help people who are suffering unnecessarily in many cases from diseases simply because they don't have access to the care they need. But even if I become a heartless capitalist, we should do it anyway, because if people are healthy, they can be more effective economic agents in the economy of our planet, and so I guess from an economic perspective, we'd want everyone to be healthy and have an effective life as well. So yes, we should absolutely should act to develop drugs, vaccines, and health, other healthcare interventions for everyone on the planet, in my view.